Great stuff there. What this passage says is that Aristotle's speech is not fitting for a fool. And after reading this book and seeing how he was just completely manhandling, you know, Christopher Hitchens, for instance, when I get home tonight, I'm probably going to go online and see if I can watch the recorded video of the debate that he had with Christopher Hitchens. Because Christopher Hitchens is a magnificent speaker. He's a wonder, you know, to watch. He's just got such a command of the English language. He's the one that died this year. But the guy was just astonishing. But he was a fool, an atheist, and one who, with that excellent speech, did nothing but harm to the world at large. He's a hero to so many. Then we saw in chapter 26, verses 7 and 9, like the legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools, and like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Well, fools can use proverbs too, but they're useless in their case. Then we closed last week with 19:10, luxury is not fitting for a fool, much less for a slave to rule over princes. It's just not right, brethren, that foolish people should be wealthy, that they should have luxury. It's one of the vagaries, you know, of life under the sun, and Solomon had much to say about it, but Ecclesiastes, didn't he? You know, there's vanity of vanities, a lot of different things that did are wrong in the world, and you have to learn how to just deal with this wrongness. But, you know, luxury is one of those. Now, in chapter 26, you know, just, again, curious, I don't think there was any, you know, mastermind intent involved here, but in chapter 26, we've already studied verses 7 and 9. Now we're going to look at verses 1 and 8. First, verse 1, like snow in summer and like rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. Well, you can pretty well understand the seasons there, brethren. If it snows in the summer, what do you think? Something's backwards, you know? And if it's going to rain, then in the harvest time, it's not only weird, but what? It could be disastrous for the sake of the crop that you're trying to bring in. You know, you could be losing, you know, the year's income in an agricultural economy. So again, you see some of the danger that's involved there. And his point is, so honor is not fitting for a fool. I have a really hard time, brethren, and I honestly, I don't want anybody to think that I'm feeling superior, you know, or condescending, nor do I want to say it's a sin. I just want you to know that for me personally, there's something I really just cannot watch. And that's Hollywood giving awards to themselves. When they do these Academy Awards and the Golden Globes and half a dozen others, you know, I don't know how, SAG Awards, and how many ways does Hollywood tell itself that it's great? I personally just can't stomach it because I know what these people are like. They're celebrities who are making a living out of being in your face well known. If you don't know who Madonna is, I don't know how you did it, but teach me. Please. Get that beast out of my mind. You know, they're self-promoters. They know how to make money off of being famous. That's what they're all about. And then they get together and they give each other, you know, a bunch of awards. But what you see in the news is Lindsay Lohan. Is there any other news in the world behind it, you know, besides her? I got Google's news, and I don't think I've seen a page in years. Headline. It didn't have that woman, you know, there. Who are these people? They are the worst kind of immoral. They are the worst kind of destructive to themselves and to the legions of followers that they are training to be like this. They teach people the drunken craziness is exciting and wonderful and should be emulated. And I can't do it. If you can do it, I'm not saying it's a sin, but I think it just might fit into this proverb right here. And you might give it some thought there. You know, when they all get together to give each other honor and give whole speeches about how great they are, remember who they are and what they are, and ask yourself if this is the place to be. And so, like snow in summer and like rain in harvest, honor is not fitting for a fool. In verse 8 of chapter 26, like one who binds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. You all know what a stone in a sling is all about. If you haven't heard about David and Goliath yet, you're in the wrong class. My wife, you can show this young early fool, several others. You know what happened there. Now, how does a sling work? You tell me. It's not a slingshot. What did he do? There it is. See, he's got it going like this. You want straps, pouch, put your rocket, you start slinging. Now, if you carefully stitched the pouch shut, got a great rock there, and you start swinging it now, what do you got? You kind of got a problem. Who's as likely to get hurt here? You can get rid of it. If you let go, you got to let go of both straps, you know, and then it's ineffective. Anyway, the thing is not working like that. That, you know, it's just all wrong. You'd never do that. It's silly to do that. And I think that's exactly what Solomon's trying to do. He wants you to laugh. He wants you to see the absurdity of the thing. Who would bind a stone in a sling? Sooner give honor to a fool. Fools don't deserve it. It's inappropriate. It's ineffective, maybe even dangerous, as would be rain in the heart. I think Linda, somebody in the back had a hand up. Linda, real loud, Linda, my ears are so bad. Yeah, you certainly want to read this book, Life After Death by Dinesh D'Souza. You'll love it because he gets into it in great way. Christopher Hitchens wrote a book. It's called God Is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything. And that's exactly what they think about anybody that has faith. What they do is, quite erroneously, they just say, well, now look, how many millions of people have died because of a religious conviction? What were the Crusades about? What is terrorism about? How many millions of people have been slaughtered by some other people because of the difference in their religion? You never heard of problems, you know, in northern England, you know, in the British Isles. And so they make a big deal out of this. And what Dinesh does is he simply sits down a few words. He says, boy, that's a great point. How many people have died in wars because of atheists? Atheistic China and Russia and it's way more. And so the atheist is just dishonest, just purely dishonest. And so they blow this smoke all out into the room. You know, well, look at all that. Well, that's terrible. You know, that's also not Christianity, and also not, you know, what God was intending. In the Old Testament, we can talk about that and how God uses nations to punish other nations. But that's what they do, is they just make the assumption that religion poisons everything because some people who weren't obeying God did some evil things. But they accuse those folks of obeying God and then, you know, charging religion with the fault. So Christopher Hitchens, that was his conviction. Religion poisons everything. You are a poison in our society that needs to be eliminated. Your thinking needs to be straightened out. Okay, so now, anybody else have a comment there? Alright, so now we're still in the section on things that are not fitting, but you can tell that was odd. You had four of them in chapter 26, and then you split them with chapter 19. You know why you're doing that? But it's because, you know, these sub-sections have, you know, certain qualities. The next verse is verse 11, and things that are not fitting, but a little bit different structure there. So in 26:11, like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. So we've heard this dog go vomit thing before. We've heard it over in the New Testament. We've heard it, you know, in Peter's mouth. And Peter was only quoting a proverb, or at least making a reference to this proverb, chapter 26, in verse 11. A fool repeating his folly is like a dog returning to its vomit. The stuff was actually poison. The animal was sick. It threw this stuff up. You know, it's now, instead of the humor of the sling, what have we got? Just the stomach-churning disgust, you know, of this image of the dog. Solomon's pretty capable, isn't he? He is very graphic, Solomon is. He paints these word pictures that really stick with you, too. And so we want to remember here that these things ought not to be done. Nobody wants a sick dog, and if their dog is sick, they especially don't want to see this fashion on the part of the dog. That being the case, then, a fool repeating his folly ought to be to us just revolting in the extreme. But it is the way of fools, isn't it? Because what? About their mistakes, never learn, do they? Never see the difference. You know that they're not able to correct it. Greg, got a comment?
Yeah, I'm sorry, this is gross, but the point is that the dog will vomit the stuff up again and again. I have a big black dog. Maybe some of you remember the dog. And he was doing that. He kept on vomiting this stuff up and returning to it.
Give us the PG version.
Yeah, I think
it was Einstein, and I'm not sure about that, and I can't remember the exact quote either. But I want to explore this a little bit further, because the most famous way that people remember this idea is not, you know, from the proverb right here. It is, I think, from Einstein. And it went something like, the definition of insanity is what? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. But I would like to think about this for a minute. If you're doing the same thing over and over again, and you're expecting a different result, is that necessarily either insane or evil? The dog returning to his vomit is what a fool repeating his folly is like. A fool repeating his folly is like this. But is it true that if you continue to do the same thing expecting a different result, that you are necessarily a fool or insane? Think about that for a minute.
Not if the results are good.
Okay. Not if the results are good. I have been trying for 40 years to bring people to Christ. And I've been doing it exactly the same way every time. What's the only thing I've got to give them? The gospel. What do the vast majority of people do? Reject it. But what do I keep doing? Expecting a different result. Giving them that gospel. Because that is not a foolish thing to do. That is a what? That is a wise thing to do. And every so often, guess what happens? I actually get a different result. In the right heart, what does the seed of the gospel do? See? So I just want you to remember that. Because I had occasion as a Christian working with brethren who were suggesting endlessly, I can't tell you how many times I've had brethren tell me Einstein's definition of insanity. But they usually cite it in the context of we've got to come up with a new way to present the gospel. Because it's not working. And it's insane to keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. Now what do we got? Now what we've got is an excuse in the name of Einstein to abandon the gospel, which is not foolish and needs to be repeated like we saw in Isaiah 2 weeks ago on the Sunday morning sermon. Until the last person dies, Isaiah, you're going to go out and preach this gospel, and I'm telling you in advance they're not going to accept it, but you're going to preach it. That is not insane, and that is not foolish.
Here. If that is insanity, then we are following an insane Christ, because that is exactly what
to the point of putting him on the cross. But he wasn't backing up, and he wasn't changing his gospel. He wasn't trying to fit anybody. What he did was, one of my very favorite chapters in the whole New Testament is John chapter 6. Two polar opposites take place in John 6. In John 6, Jesus comes to the apex of his popularity. They would force him to become king. What did he do when he got so popular? They were going to make him a king whether he wanted to or not. What did he do? He rebuked them. They come for the bread, not for the gospel. They wanted the food, not the truth. And then what did they do? They left him in droves. So now he sees they're just scattering, they're abandoning him. And his disciples see it. So now he turns to the disciples, and what does he say? You don't want to go too, do you? Now, in what way was Jesus going to change what he was doing? In no way at all. Okay? And if he lost the whole crowd, then what? So be it. And you 12, if he lost them, then what? So be it. The truth is the truth. It is not a shame. It is not foolish. You do Bible things in Bible ways. You do God's things in God's way. And then you're doing the planting, but who grants the increase? That's God's side anyway. And so we're not responsible for that. It's particularly, you know, just heavy in my heart and in my mind. Because believe me, I've really been beaten up with this until I just got to the point I wish Einstein had never been born. I was so tired of hearing people say, we got to change what we're doing because it's the definition of insanity to keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. I will not abandon the gospel even if nobody ever comes to Christ again. I will die. I'm 61 and approximately I'm going to get 39 more years. Okay. Without another soul coming to Christ. But I'm not going to leave that straight and narrow path. Are you? No. You are not a dog returning to his vomit. If you are endlessly repeating exactly what God tells you to do, he grants the increase. That's not under your power anyway. You just serve the way you're supposed to. Okay? So if it's the definition of insanity to keep doing the same thing and expect different results, Joseph should have quit serving the Lord about the time his brothers pitched him into that pit. Huh? But he didn't. And then the next thing you knew, he went from the pit to slavery. He went from slavery to prison. And you think somewhere along the way, the guy wise up and say, well, this doesn't work. I keep expecting a different result. And then lo and behold, what happened? A really different result. So you got to be careful with that. You got to be careful. Just be careful. Jared, I think what's
ahead? Yeah, I was just going to observe a passage that I know that most of us are familiar with from Isaiah 55.
Everybody, Isaiah 55.
Verse 10 and 11. To Isaiah, God says, for as the rain comes down, the snow from heaven, and do not return there, but water the earth, and make it bring forth and bud. And give seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish what I please, and it shall prosper in the thing for which I have sent it. God's word doesn't fail. People may fail to respond properly to it, but God intends to give them an opportunity to respond properly. If they don't, that's their problem, but God's word will have fulfilled its task and its purpose.
Amen. You know what they say, too, about great minds traveling in the same channel? You know, yesterday at Sherry's, I quoted this to Scott Slora when he was trying to get out of studying the Bible with me. I said, look, God's word will not return to a void. The only difference between Jerry and me, Jerry knew it was in Isaiah 55:11, and I didn't have a clue where it was. I just knew what it said. Thank you for that. Okay, everybody, back to, things that are not fitting, but I think we're done with chapter 26. Anybody last comment there? And if not, let's turn over to chapter 17. Okay, so it's chapter 17 and verse 28 it is. 17:28. We've got two more that have to do with things that are not fitting as they relate to fools. 17:28, even a fool, when silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's considered prudent. Okay? And you think, well, what's that doing in things that are not fitting? It kind of seems like a strange place to put it. But look, even if a fool is silent, what is he still? He's a fool. What does everybody think he is? Well, this is like giving honor to a fool, isn't it? See, so I put it there for that reason. But I really don't think this was advice to fools, was it?
So I know I put it here, and you know this was just kind of out of the box, but really, what is this instruction about? Who is this for? That's for everybody who really wants to be wise. If you really want to be wise, then what? Shut up. Close your mouth. Don't talk. Now, brother, many years ago, coming across this passage, I decided I was going to put it to the test. And so very consciously, I have done this time and time and time again over the course of, you know, probably 25 years, I guess. I don't know. Long, long time. And it has just gotten really amusing to me. Now, you don't have this problem, and I'm so glad for you. But I spent 27 years in a congregation that did not have elders. What we had is called business meetings, also known as pandemonium, misery, terms you might use for that. It's the best way we could do, you know, lacking elders, but we lacked elders. And so a tiny little rural congregation I was in, you know, we just had to live without them. But I'd go into these business meetings, and with this in mind, I would just do my little petri dish scientific test. You know, we'd take up some issue, you know, capability or whatever it is. You know, and then everybody would start going around, and they'd be raising their hands, and they'd be talking, you know, a big discussion going on. And I would just clam up and watch it happen. I cannot tell you how many times that happened. Finally, they'd all run out of gas, and they would all look at each other, and then they would go, what do you think, Larry? Because they realized I was the only one who hadn't spoken. Now, look, I'm not the brightest guy, sharpest knife, and all the rest of it. I'm really not. But I noticed another thing. Just about every time, whatever I said, guess what happened? That's the one they decided they'd do. And I really don't think it's because I'm so smart. I think it was because of this. That's what it was. So I just lay there hoping I was right. Because if I shut up and say something stupid, they're probably going to do it. This is powerful stuff, brother. It really is. It's powerful stuff. Now you try it. I'm not kidding. You try it. Next time you're in a group, you know, everybody's sitting around a dinner table and it's your kids or anything else. And then, you know, the big debate erupts. Just don't say anything. But wait and see what happens. You can test these proverbs. And I guarantee you, they work. And sometimes it'll just make you laugh, you know, when you see it happen. So this is not advice for the fool or even really about the fool. But it is to just point out, you know, a fact of life. Even a fool, when he's silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's considered prudent. Now, brethren, this is true whether you're dealing with people that are believers in God or not. I don't claim to understand it. Don't know that Solomon did. He just observed it. And so he said, this is so. But there is something in human nature that is just buried in the psyche, I guess. It's like Santa knowing which way to swim at the time of year, you know. It is that people realize those who say less probably do what? They think more. Those who say less are probably more disciplined, too. And after a while, when you're going chatter, 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 most people will then kind of wake up suddenly and think, well, I'm talking too much. You ever had that feeling? Yeah. Oh, God, that doesn't look good. We just know this. Solomon is here to tell us, be conscious of it. Know that this is true. And so, next time you're trying to bring somebody to Christ,
The important thing is to make sure that you do most of the talking, right? No. If you really want to bring people to Christ, what are you going to let them do first? Get it out of their system. Let them run. I told you about this Seventh-day Adventist. I watch my clock. I try to give the guy about two-thirds of the time to my one-third. Sometimes, in an hour and a half, I'll bet you I didn't actually speak for 15 minutes. Let them get it out. Let them exhaust themselves. Take your notes. Figure out what to do with it all. And then, in a few words, you can take all of that garbage and just sweep it out the door. If you do it the way Solomon suggested. Be the last one to speak. Choose your words carefully. Make sure that what you say is just the truth and the unanswerable, if possible. See? And then, wave goodbye and let them think about it for a week. Okay? Solomon knew what he was doing on every level, dealing with outright fools to dealing with the most righteous and wise among us. He's teaching us about persuasion here. He's teaching us about soul winning. He's teaching us about how to bring people around to your way of thinking. He's teaching us also, and all of this, I'm just adding into this verse because of so many others that we see, but he's teaching us how to avoid conflict. He's teaching us how not to waste time by carefully managing time and redeeming that time. You know, from the time my kids were really small, you know, I tell them, pick your fights. What does that mean? You don't argue about everything. How much is wrong with the world, brethren? Everything! It's all wrong! Take your pick! The thing's a mess! Okay, fine. So what are you going to do about it? There's so many things that are wrong in the world, brethren, and a whole lot of them really don't matter. Really don't. You know, I was tormented for years because of a stop sign. It took me years to get over that stop sign. We lived way out in the country. And there was this road and the one that came up to it. This road had no stop signs. And this one did. So when you drove up, you had to stop and look both ways to see if anybody was coming. But all these others, just get going. And there's another sign. Cross traffic does not stop. Right? And then one day, in the brilliance of the lawyer's mind, they thought, three stop signs are better than one. Let's put stop signs there too. Okay? And then, every day, I'd have to stop twice more in the middle of the country where I couldn't see anybody for miles. And I'm going, why? Now I came about that close, writing my letter and starting my campaign. You didn't ask me about those stop signs? We don't need those stop signs. We haven't had them since the beginning of Apple. I know how exactly I was telling you, brother, I could see myself in the city council meetings. I was going to get rid of them. And finally, one day it dawned on me, there's a lot of things wrong in the world. Is stopping twice more every day one of the big ones? And I was eating up just enormous amounts of my thought time, you know, on these stop signs. They're still there. They shouldn't be. But they are. These are more important things. So, brother, you just be quiet. Be quiet with your mouth. Be quiet in your heart and in your mind. Learn to be content. Learn to accept it. Things are wrong. And by the way, you can pray for my mom. My mom's not a Christian. I don't have any hope that she ever will become one. She's 82 years old now, you know, and I just don't see any inroads, you know, in there at all. She called me again today. She calls me a couple of times a week. My brother warned me yesterday she was going to be calling. What's on my mom's mind? President Obama has consciously decided that he wants to destroy this nation. He's in it to ruin it. He's a saboteur that has come to kill America. And that is his intent, and he's only got 3 years left to do it. Brother, if that's true, which I highly doubt, how much time should I spend on it? Well, you want to start, you know, collecting freeze-dried foods and getting ready for the apocalypse, you know, that's really coming, and be my guest. But my mom is consumed with it. She's 82 years old, and she can't sleep. She's calling me all the time. How do I protect my money? Do I sell my house? What do I do? She's all set because Obama's going to destroy the country, and he's only got 3 years left to do it. I can't get through to her, brethren. And even if Obama destroys the country, Mom, there is no way you're going to stop it. And all of this worrying is not going to help anything but make you miserable and me too. But I tell you, these conversations are miserable. Okay? So, even the fool, if he just picks his fights and doesn't get all upset about everything and just is still, people will think what? Yeah. And then when people think you're smart, when people believe you're wise, when they attribute to you a superior intellect and prudence, and then you speak, what are they likely to do if that's what they think about you? They're going to do what you think. We might save America yet, brother, in the next 3 years. We just have to learn to be Solomonic. Okay? Take your fights. So, one last one. 1433. Now, I didn't hand this out because I just want to read it to you, but I did go to the effort to get 14 translations for chapter 14 and verse 33. Chapter 14 and verse 33 is a tough proverb because the way that it is, I think most literally and properly translated, it kind of doesn't make any sense. Now, I think the problem here is likely that we just don't understand the speech patterns of 3,000 years ago. So that there is something in the way Solomon said this that in the vernacular of a 3,000 years ago Jew, it made perfect sense. For us, it really doesn't. It just sounds wrong. Chapter 14, verse 33 says, "Wisdom rests in the heart of one who has understanding, but in the hearts of fools it is made known." But wait a minute. I thought there isn't any wisdom or understanding in a fool. That's their problem. So if wisdom and understanding rests in the heart of the wise person, see, one who has understanding, and the fool doesn't have any, well then, how can that wisdom or understanding be made known in the heart of a fool? He hasn't got any. What's he going to make known? See, our problem, it's a translation kind of an issue here. Now, I'm just going to read these to you, but I want you to see the various ways that people are trying to translate this so that it can make sense out of it. Now, first four I'm going to give you are essentially all the same. The New American Standard updated, the New American Standard Bible, so I guess that's undated, and then the Young's Literal Translation, and very surprisingly to me, the New International Version. These first three are very literal, very accurate, very careful to translate properly into an English equivalent what the Greek, in this case Hebrew, word says, okay? They're translations. Except for the NIV, it kind of tends to be a paraphrase most of the time, and they kind of go, well, this is what I think it means, rather than, this is what it says. Okay? Now, all four of these, though, they go like this. Wisdom rests in the heart of one who has understanding, but in the hearts of fools it is made known. Wisdom rests in the heart of one who has understanding, but in the bosom of fools it is made known. In the heart of the intelligent, wisdom doth rest. And in the midst of fools, it is known. And fourth, the NIV, wisdom reposes in the heart of the discerning, and even among fools, she lets herself be known. Now, in this one case, after all the years I've been maligning the New International Version, I finally found a verse I like in there. It's this one. And so wisdom reposes in the heart of the discerning, and even among fools, she lets herself be known. But then there's this. This will be the New King James, the Old King James, the American Standard, Darby, and the Amplified Bible. And you don't need to know which are which. Wisdom rests in the heart of him who has understanding, but what is in the heart of fools is made known. Wisdom rests in the heart of him that has understanding, but that which is in the midst of fools is made known. Wisdom rests in the heart of him that has understanding, but that which is in the inward part of fools is made known. Wisdom rests in the heart of the intelligent man, but that which is in the foolish maketh itself known. Wisdom rests silently in the mind and heart of him who has understanding, but that which is in the inward part of self-confident fools is made known. Now see how different that group is from the previous group? In the previous group, it was saying pretty clearly there's some kind of wisdom or something that's associated with the heart of the fool. Okay? And he's letting it out. These others, these six, they came back, and they group five, I guess it is, they came back and said, no, if the wisdom's in here, foolishness is over there. If the wise man knows to keep some of his wisdom to himself, the fool hadn't got a sense, he left it all out. And we saw all that last week, didn't we? How fool is that, Jerry?
I've got a New King James here, which, as you read, is similar to the Old King James and the American Standard translation as well. When it says, wisdom rests in the heart of him who has understanding, but what is in the heart of fools is made known. It doesn't say that what's in his heart is wisdom. It just says whatever's there.
Exactly.
When he's filling out because he's in a blast.
That's exactly it. These five, in their translating, they said, we're going to make a distinction. The wisdom's in the wise man, and what's in the foolish man is foolish. It's not wisdom. The first four suggested wisdom was in both. So there's the difference between the two. That's exactly it. Now, there's a second or third way that people try to explain this. So this is the New Revised Standard, the Old Revised Standard, and the New Living Testament. Wisdom is at home in the mind of one who has understanding, but it is not known in the heart of fools. Wisdom abides in the man of understanding, but it is not known in the heart of fools. Wisdom is enshrined in an understanding heart. Wisdom is not found among fools. Now how did those three groups of translators decide to solve the problem? They just added the word not. And that's just wrong. I don't care how hard a struggle you're having understanding anything the Bible says. That's not translation. That's an argument with what God said. So in those three, they just added the word not and solved their problem based on what they thought was, you know, something that they had a right to do and it would fix the problem, but it isn't what God said at all. Okay, so that's unacceptable. And the last two, this is really great. Today's English version says, wisdom is in every thought of an intelligent man. Fools know nothing about wisdom. Brother, that's not even a paraphrase. That's just making something up. And now look at this. The Living Bible. I mean, y'all remember the Living Bible? Hugely popular for a long time. Wisdom is enshrined in the hearts of men of common sense, but it must shout loudly before fools will hear it. Is there any of that in the Bible? No! So they just made up. And that was a really popular translation. Lenny?
Hey, guys, one. On the computers in French.
Oh, okay, we're going to get a French translation now, everybody. All right.
It says, in the intelligent heart, red wisdom. But in the middle of fools, she, meaning wisdom, makes herself.
Okay, makes herself apparent. That goes back to the first group. It's an accurate French translation. So next time you're out shopping for a French Bible, you want to be sure to ask Faye where she got hers. But it is, it's an accurate translation. And what I want to do is just to give you a sense of what's out there and what you're going to find. You know, these are not the 14 most obscure translations the world's ever seen. These are translations that are out there, and people are reading, they're looking at it. And so I thought, not only would we deal with the proverb, but I wanted you to see that not all translations are the same. And a point of fact, brethren, there's quite a lot of translations that aren't translations at all. They're just faking it. You know? And you need to be able to help people with that. I said, no, there's a difference. Some translations really care about giving a word-for-word equivalent. Others are only interested in giving the sense of what they think this means. Those two are poles and worlds apart. You know, you need a translation that's accurate, and then you wrestle with the problems that arise because of it before you start rewriting the Bible to solve your problem. Now, the upshot of all this is, there's really probably two of these ways that make perfect sense. And my suggestion to you is, our problem is not that the Bible made a mistake and said something nonsensical. And it's not that we can't understand it either. It just is, brethren, that 3,000 years ago, grammar and thought patterns and speech patterns, you know, were different. And so this one eludes us today. It makes it more difficult. But when you take into account 65 other verses on the fool, and all the ones we've been looking at about things here that are not fitting, that's 3, 6, 9 of them, when you put all that together, you're pretty certain that there's not a lot of wisdom in the heart of a fool. But is wisdom vindicated in the behavior of a fool? Sure. Can you see wisdom in the way the fool acts? Careful how you answer that. If a fool keeps his mouth shut, was that smart?
Yeah,
it was. See? So wisdom is justified. Wisdom is exonerated. Wisdom, you know, is honored. Even in the lives of fools, seeing that wisdom told us that that's the way they would be. And how many times were we told that there's wisdom at rest in the mind of understanding, and that they don't speak at all, lest they be fools? Okay? So I'm thinking what happened is way back then, people understood what was being said there. And now we're struggling with it, but in the end, you put all of this together, and still, nobody's tempted to be a fool, and nobody thinks fools are wise. But wisdom can be seen in a fool, and the wise man knows how to handle it. Okay? Now, I think that's my last bill. So, any quick comment or question? Anybody here, Ken? Mike?
That makes a lot of sense. Where you were saying, is wisdom known when the fool is doing what they're doing? Yeah, I mean, even with writers, I didn't understand it.
The New International Version, I like it the best. Wisdom reposes in the heart of the discerning, and even among fools, she lets herself be known. Okay?